Last Word with Matt Cooper.
So we're joined in studio now by Jim Carr of The Corrs, of course, but who also, of course, came to some prominence last year when he gave us an interview prior to the first Lisbon Treaty referendum, and he's back again with us today. Hello to you, Jim.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me on again.
No problem at all. Tell us about the airplane you've got flying around Dublin today, please.
Oh, well, I decided to launch my own mini campaign, my own no-vote campaign today. There was a friend of mine up there. He normally flies 747s, but I think he was doing something more worthwhile today.
So what did he fly around? He brought one of those banners behind, is it?
It was a banner, yeah. Just took off from Weston Airport and just flew around for 2 hours. And thanks be to God, it was an absolutely beautiful day. So there's lots of people outside and saw it.
Indeed, we got a few emails into the office about it. What does it say on the banner?
JimCarr.com, vote no.
So if people go to JimCarr.com, what are they going to find?
They're going to find a short 8 minute video piece of me speaking about the Lisbon Treaty.
Okay. Before we get to what's in that today, what do you make of the news that Declan Ganley has re-entered the fray?
Absolutely fantastic news. I'm delighted. I didn't expect this to happen at all. It's just great news.
Why is this so good?
Well, because obviously I'm very much a no voter, and I mean, it's the same treaty that has been brought to us yet again. These protocol promises basically are not worth the paper that they're written on. So it's actually exactly the same treaty as the original one that was rejected by the Dutch and the French. But I'm going to bring up some points that I might have touched on the last time, but they're very, very relevant today because it's the same treaty. Now, I liken the quote that Valérie Giscard d'Estaing said to a Le Monde newspaper as I liken it to, say you were going to buy a used car, right, and you happen to overhear the used car salesman telling a friend of his about the defects in the car that he was trying to sell you. Would you buy that car? Of course you wouldn't, right? And now listen to this quote. Public opinion will be led to adopt, without knowing it, the proposals we dare not present to them publicly. All the earlier proposals will be in the new text, but will be hidden and disguised in some way. Would you sign on the dotted line to that treaty? Absolutely not.
But the treaty is in front of us. Now, if people want to go and read the treaty, it's a long treaty, it's a very detailed treaty, but everything is there in black and white, isn't it? I mean, what is hidden if it is actually there in the treaty?
Well, so I'll get to that in a second. I want to give you another quote, since this is one I didn't give the last time. The founding father of the EU, Jean Monnet, said, Europe's nations shall be guided towards a superstate without their people understanding what is happening. This can be accomplished by successive steps, each disguised as having an economic purpose, so familiar, but which will eventually and irreversibly lead to federation. Now, again, would you sign on the dotted line to a treaty once you hear the founding father uttering those words? I don't think so.
Well, that's a quote. I mean, what context was that quote uttered, and how many years ago was it?
I'm not actually sure when it was uttered, but he certainly said that. I don't have the date here, but just in relation to the deception that is in the treaty, I took one of the articles for an example, and Article 2 of Protocol Number 6 from the European Charter of Fundamental Rights, which becomes legally binding if we pass this Lisbon Treaty. It says everybody has a right to life. Nobody shall be condemned to death. And that sounds lovely, okay, but then there's a straightforward footnote, isn't it? But there's a footnote which says a state may make provisions in its law for the death penalty in times of war or imminent threat of war. So what they've done is they've created a little backdoor by which they can either dilute the original basis of the article or else negate it completely.
But how likely is that? This is the argument that Aaron Gabrock made on this programme the other night. They have the ad in the Live newspaper, the Catholic fundamentalist newspaper, which is delivered door to door, making exactly the same argument about that particular provision as you're making. In reality, how likely do you think is that to happen in Ireland, that people, because they're suffering from depression or mental illness or because they're in poverty, would have their children taken away from them, have their liberty taken away from them? I mean, who really thinks that is ever likely to happen?
Well, there's a massive transfer of power, an incremental transfer of power happening from the Irish government over to the unelected bureaucrats in Brussels. And another major worrying thing about this...
Jim, what's wrong with that? Haven't we made a complete Hames of running the country here? Haven't all the best things that have happened in Ireland, in making Ireland modern over the last 30 and 40 years, have come from the various European laws that we've been forced to enact? Hasn't it made it a far better country, the fact that we're a more liberal country, more socially historically progressive country that we've had to take on various rules and laws from Europe that we probably wouldn't have otherwise?
Well, that's a question you should put to the farmers and fishermen, because our farmers and fishermen have been squeezed out of existence because of EU laws. Our farmers have been forced to sell milk for cheaper than cost. Our fishermen are being forced to dump fish at sea because they've gone over their quotas. I mean, that's disastrous for our company.
Didn't they get massive checks for many years under the Common Agricultural Policy? Didn't the country get the money for all the roads that have been built all around the country? Haven't we had massive infusion of capital, companies coming to operate out of Ireland because then they could sell into the European Union? Haven't we had the benefit, as I put to Lucinda Creighton earlier, the European Central Bank has effectively been funding this country over the last year when our banks went bust? Haven't we been saved by our membership of Europe?
Well, granted, our farmers and fishermen have been given loads of money, basically, not to fish and to leave fields empty. And, you know, there's supposed to be a food crisis on the planet, and they're being asked to do that. I mean, that surely is short-term gain for a long-term pain. Our farmers and fishermen are the lifeblood of this country, and we really, really need to support them in every way, and the EU is not supporting them.
But will we not end up, if we start to follow that argument, going back to being all farmers and fishermen and not having all the modern industries and services that membership of the European Union has provided to us?
Well, I just, you know, in terms of basic foodstuffs, it's very important that we look after them. I think, you know, food is already generally suffering. I think that nutritional levels are probably down by about 40% because food is travelling into this country when it should be grown here. We should be eating our own produce.
But if you take that argument, then we wouldn't export any food. Our farmers wouldn't make any money by selling food abroad if nobody else was to be buying food out of other countries.
That's why I had no problem with the original treaty, where it was an economic agreement and free trade. You know, absolutely no problem. But you have a situation now where it's gone from economic integration into political integration, and that's a completely different ballgame.
I want to ask you a bit about Declan Gandhi again, though, because you said you're delighted to see him back. Who's backing him financially? Do you not worry about the people that Declan Gandhi associates with? He hangs out with the American military. He hangs around with very rich businessmen. Are you not worried that these are the type of people who are behind the conspiracies that you've spoken about to change the world order? That he is actually one of them?
I don't know. I haven't looked into his background fully. I know it's been certainly debated and written about at length in some newspapers, but I felt that there was certainly an attempt at a demonisation campaign. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, he's voting no, and you know.
So does it matter who's behind him then? If he's on your side, does it matter as to who's giving him the money to run these campaigns?
Well, I haven't personally looked into that.
Why not? You've looked into an awful lot of things. I mean, you spend a lot of time, don't you, researching things on the internet. So why not look into Declan Gandhi?
Well, I've been looking at the whole macroscopic thing of where this is going, really. I haven't been, focusing in on Declan Gandhi. But just to talk about macroscopically where this whole thing is going, and I spoke about this again, and I think an awful lot of people are out there are waking up to exactly what is going on. That is the one world government. I mean, this EU basically is a stepping stone towards a one world government.
But what would be involved in a one world government?
It's basically the elite international banking families and European royalty and aristocracy are trying to set up a one world government, global governance, basically. And they're well on their way to doing it.
How are they well on their way to doing it? Hasn't the banking system fallen into absolute crisis where many of them have lost absolute fortunes in recent years?
Well, we've talked about that before. When I come on to you, I talk about the financial crisis. I certainly have my opinions on that. But my understanding is what they're trying to do is to merge the European Union with the North American Union, which has been done in stealth, the Asia-Pacific Union and the African Union to form a one-world government. Now, what I have learned is that they're trying to set up, believe it or not, a scientific dictatorship. And you can see the slow incremental loss of civil liberties all across Europe because of the war on terror fraud, and also now because of the man-made global warming.
Sorry, don't we have more civil liberties in Europe than we ever had? I mean, the European Union itself came about to try and make sure there would never be wars on continental Europe like the war from 1939 to 1945 that took over 6 million lives. Isn't that what the European Union is all about? Rather than actually taking away liberties, it's providing safeguards for people. It's to make sure that there won't be wars.
Well, it's the elite who are trying to create this one world government that want the wars. I mean, when you get into studying 9/11, I've got a little bit new information on that. It's absolutely unbelievable and frightening what is going on.
So where are you getting this information? I mean, you say you're studying it. Where are you finding out all these things?
Well, if you read, I've read some of the books of the elite. I've studied excerpts from their books. And actually, if people go to my website, jimcore.com, there's a section called One World Government, and there's hundreds of quotes from the elite and their minions talking about the coming world government.
I want to ask you a little bit about 9/11. This is, of course, the 8th anniversary of 9/11. I see Charlie Sheen, the actor, has got involved now in the United States in challenging Barack Obama to release various files and documents which he thinks will prove that 9/11 was an inside job by the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Is this theory really going to fly, in fairness?
I'm afraid so. I mean, what has happened recently is a group of eminent scientists were positively able to identify unreacted nanothermite in the dust from the World Trade Centers. Now, to explain what nanothermite is, it's a high-energy pyrotechnic explosive that can cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. Now, how on earth did that get into the dust from the World Trade Center? But it gives explanation to the obvious controlled demolition of the Twin Towers, actually the three towers, World Trade Center 7 as well.
Could it not have been in the planes that crashed into the Twin Towers?
The scientists were able to determine that there must have been tons of nanothermite in the dust. I mean,
so are you suggesting that the Twin Towers were detonated? That it wasn't the planes that crashed into them that actually caused the explosions that caused the Twin Towers to collapse?
Well, isn't it very obvious when you look at the footage? But it was a first in demolition history. It wasn't an implosion. It was actually an explosion where everything was expelled and the beams were expelled 500 feet out vertically, horizontally, sorry. You know, it's kind of obvious when you look at it, and obviously with the discovery by these eminent scientists of the nanothermite, it does give explanation to what we saw.
And why would the American administration, the Bush administration, have wanted to kill 3,500 of its own people in the Twin Towers, and the people who were killed in the Pentagon, and the people in the other planes that crashed?
Plus 6,000 troops and 1.5 million Iraqis as well. They wanted obviously, as it was outlined in the PNAC document, which is Project for a New American Century, this neocon think tank kind of secretive group. But they put it out on the internet. Whereas they were calling for a new Pearl Harbor, basically. They needed a pretext so that they could go to war in the Middle East, and so they could dominate the oil, get an oil pipeline across the Caspian Sea, and also to launch a war on democracy here in the West.
Okay, is there more of this on jimcore.com?
Jimcore.com, absolutely. There's a lot more information on it. Do visit. And vote no.
Thank you very much for joining us, Jim Carr. We'll be back after this.
The Last Word with the Irish Times. 150 years reporting global.